Hello, I'm Caroline Baum and welcome to the April Booktopia Buzz. Well, this month two Brits really fought it out over first place for me, but in the end I had to hand it to Chris Cleeve as his novel Everyone Brave is Forgiven really pulled me in emotionally. But that does not diminish my admiration for the wondrous Kate Tempest, whose The Bricks That Built the Houses is perhaps the most exciting debut of the year so far. There's also a heartrending novel from Georgia Blaine, a funny, fresh take on Jane Austen from Curtis Sittenfield, and some hilarious, fierce mischief from Alexi Sale. And to cap it all off, there's a flawless collection of essays from Helen Garner. So spoil yourselves this Easter. The pleasure is going to last way longer and be a lot healthier than a chocolate bunny. Okay, so the book of the month, Everyone Brave is Forgiven. Oh my, Chris Cleeve, you have written a wondrous and unforgettable book. Now, all of Cleeve's novels tell stories that are affecting and topical. Usually, he sets his stories in the most contemporary, immediate world of terrorism, refugees, or elite athletes training for the Olympics. But this time, he's done something I did not expect and reached back into the past, telling the interconnected stories of his characters Mary and Alistair. Born into a posh family, Mary signs up as soon as war is declared as a teacher and is allocated a group of students who are rejects, the children that no one wanted when they were all evacuated to the country, including Zachary, who happens to be black, the son of a vaudeville entertainer. I guess I should have mentioned, shouldn't I, that we are actually referring here to World War II. Meanwhile, Alistair is an officer in the army who finds himself in the middle of the endless siege of Malta, the island more bombed than any other during World War II, and also suffering from acute starvation. These two characters meet in the briefest of encounters, though they are involved with other people at the time. Cleeve tests their courage to the maximum, putting them in extreme situations while giving them dialogue that is very British in its dry drollery and understatement. No matter how ghastly the circumstances, that stiff upper lip combined with wit conveys a stoicism that becomes increasingly moving as the stakes are raised and the devastation mounts. In tone, much of this superb novel reminded me of the similar brilliance of Kate Atkinson's Life After Life and A God in Ruins. Just when you thought there were no more stories to tell about World War II, here comes something sinewy and sparkling, packed with pent-up emotion that builds to an almost unbearable level. I'm still thinking about this book weeks after reading it, and when something sticks as persistently as this, you really know it's special. And now, The Bricks That Built the Houses. Was there ever a more perfect name than Kate Tempest? It's beautiful and stormy and kind of Shakespearean, so fitting for this great new voice, boldly harnessing poetry and imagery in prose that vibrates and shimmers with energy. Not that Tempest is an unknown quantity. She's the youngest poet ever to be awarded the prestigious Ted Hughes Prize at the ludicrous age of 24, and she's already well known as a hip-hop artist and rapper. In her performances, which are hypnotically compelling, she references classic tales of antiquity to talk about her generation. A South London girl, she's translated the uniqueness of her performing style to the page. Her way of writing in phrases and cadences that mimic and riff off the people and the places she knows so well, in a way that might remind readers of Zadie Smith's N.W., which mapped the voices and lives of people across the other side of the city. Tempest's tale has the urban grit of her neighbourhood, told with genuine love and affection for the unlovely parts of London and its inhabitants, people just trying to get by, making mistakes, doing bad things, falling in love with people who love other people, wobbling all over the shop, unsure of themselves, lying, scamming, running. Tempest gives the reader characters that are rounded, comic, pathetic, touching, and streetwise. Reading her is a thrilling glimpse into the future. But now for a sort of modern take on the past, in Eligible by Curtis Sittenfield. How clever is Curtis Sittenfield in this updating of Pride and Prejudice? Shifting the action to Cincinnati, this wickedly funny version is full of fresh twists involving IVF, subprime mortgages, gender roles, feminism, and hate sex. Yeah, hate sex. Apparently, it's a thing. Lizzie Bennett is a journalist working for a magazine called Mascara in New York City when she returns home to Cincinnati, where she learns her family are broke and encounters Fitzwilliam Darcy, a rude neurosurgeon. The stage is set for a marvellously rebooted contemporary telling of one of the most loved stories in the world, and Sittenfeld exploits all the intricacies of Austen's plot while adding newly minted social commentary that has its own bite and sass. It's a delight. Now, in Australian non-fiction, along comes a new collection of essays by Helen Garner, which is always something to look forward to. But I do have to ask myself, how does she do it? Helen Garner's eye is sharper than ever in this collection. Her prose is bracing and invigorating, like a dip in cool, clear water. Even the most mundane object or experience is transformed into something rich. She could write about a table leg and make it interesting. Actually, in this collection, she does write about a table, if not exactly the leg, and it is interesting. And she has lots of company. We see her in this collection out in the world, surrounded by friends, grandchildren, fellow writers like Tim Winton and Raymond Gaita, and we get a strong sense of the kinship and fellowship of social Helen, having perhaps in the past known her more as solitary Helen when she was licking her wounds. There is pleasure here, tempered by regret and darkness, all of it expressed in language brimming with vitality, shaped with economy and precision. It's really wonderful. And then I chose another book with a Helen in it, except that this is the Helen in the title. The book is called Enter Helen by Brooke Hauser, and it's a biography of Helen Gurley Brown, the woman who turned Cosmo magazine into a Bible for young women in the 20th century. Her life story makes for a very entertaining, gossipy read, but Hauser makes this biography a richer experience by amplifying the context in which Helen Gurley Brown was able to turn Cosmo into one of the 20th century's most successful magazines. No one interested in how feminism came into being at the same time as the glossy How to Get Your Man manual will want to miss this comprehensively researched account. Most fascinating is the relationship between Brown and feminist Gloria Steinem, who, of course, is coming here in the month of May. But it's also fascinating to learn how Brown's marriage to a Hollywood senior executive was a real partnership in which her husband was her absolute ally. Brown's obsession with remaking herself physically becomes highly neurotic, and her inability to form true friendship signals a very incomplete and flawed personality. But there's no denying that she knew how to give a certain kind of young woman exactly what she wanted when it came to talking about sex. And now, in Australian fiction, I've picked a book that couldn't be more different, actually, from what I've just been talking about. It's Georgia Blaine's Between a Wolf and a Dog, which is actually a French expression for describing different shades of darkness, a really beautiful expression, actually. There's so much sadness around this book, both real and imagined. Georgia Blaine was recently diagnosed with a fatal kind of brain tumour. It's surely no coincidence that this book is pervaded with death, although in the novel, the woman doing the dying is Hilary, an older woman, the matriarch of the family, mother to two estranged sisters, April and Esther. And because Blaine's mother is none other than the much-loved and respected journalist Anne Deveson, who went public with her diagnosis of dementia a while ago, it is tempting to see this fiction as Blaine's version of how things might have been had her mother had the capacity to take the end of her life into her own hands. But no matter whether the story is personally close to the truth, it is told with great intelligence, sensitivity, and nuance, in prose that beautifully captures the messes we make of our lives and our unpreparedness for the blows that are inevitably going to come. At times it reminded me of the way Margaret Drabble writes about British middle-class family life, combining the smallest domestic detail with big questions and moral themes. I wish the book, set over one rainy day in Sydney, but punctuated with scenes set in the past, did not come freighted with such a huge burden of impending loss, because it's a distraction from the really accomplished poise and maturity in Blaine's writing, in the scenes of sisterly rivalry and tension, and in all the dynamics that make families such intense nests of unspoken resentment, mistrust, grudges, and folly. One of her best creations is the character of Lawrence, who works as a pollster. Blaine makes him professionally foolish in a completely plausible way. And finally, in memoir, Thatcher Stole My Trousers. Now, you're not going to get a more arresting title this month than that. Thatcher Stole My Trousers by Alexi Sale. I love that Alexei Sale has lost none of that fierce anger that makes his comedy so dangerous. This memoir captures the raw energy of the early days of the comic strip at a time when Britain was going through social upheavals and convulsions, such as the miners' strike that would reshape the nation. As well as documenting his friendships with other emerging comedy stars as his own fame grows, he's caustically funny about rubbing shoulders with A-list celebrities like Sting while staying true to his communist roots. An abrasive, candid, and entertaining account of what it takes to make people laugh while retaining your convictions and your sanity. Oh, and look, just one last thing, in case you missed it. It came out recently, a new novel by American writer Elizabeth Strout called My Name is Lucy Barton. And I just want to mention this spare taut novel because it continues to mine the rich vein of mother-child relationships that have characterised all of Strout's writing. It's not as vinegary as her best-known work, Olive Kittredge, although there are moments of tartness and excruciating awkwardness that still cause an intake of breath. But Strout is masterly at oblique dialogue where what is being said is a veil for a much more unsettling and unspeakable truth. I hope you enjoyed this month's selection, and I'll be back next month. Enjoy your reading. Bye.